Hello and welcome to another episode of Transformational Blueprints, where we try to put a dent in the large number of transformation programs that fail. Hosted by me, Mario Michaels, founder and director of Synaxia Group. On this series, we will bring you unique insights drawn from first-hand experience from some of the most high-profile architecture and transformation leaders across the globe. Topics told in order to share knowledge, experiences, and ideas to inspire, innovate, and give back to the architecture community. So grab a coffee, sit back, and relax. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking to Steve Marr about the Full Stack Architect. For those of you who don't know Steve, Steve's the acting chief architect at Walgreens and previously led digital architecture at CVS. He's responsible for leading enterprise architecture and strategy across the Walgreens and driving innovation through establishing a collaborative engineering and architecture community. Throughout his 20 plus years experience in the retail, pharmacy and healthcare space, Steve places his focus on reimagining the customer experience and accelerating transformation through technology. He chairs numerous community of practices and technology committees with a focus on creating technical platforms, data-driven applications, as well as engineering excellence. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Really happy to be here.
Great. Well, let's get right into it then. So we always like to start off with a bit of background, just so there's a bit of context and people know a little bit more about you other than what I've just said. So how did you get to where you are, Steve, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us?
Sure. So I started my career as an engineer. So I'm an engineer by training, really got into really developing the back end, starting with, you know, C++, Java, and then got into front end development. So I felt like engineering and development fit really naturally to me with kind of like what I'm interested in. As I had gone through my career, I looked at architecture and then I really got into technical architecture, really went through the gambit of architecture. So platform solution, enterprise architecture, did a big part of my career in the healthcare space. And then later, about 6 years ago, got into CVS. I joined CVS. And then that was right before the onset of COVID. And during then, there was a boom. So really grew the architecture team, led digital architecture. And then for the past year and a half, I've been here at Walgreens and leading the enterprise architecture organization right now.
Perfect. And for the listeners that haven't heard of Walgreens, could you tell us a little bit about the size and scale?
Sure. So Walgreens is a part of WBA, which is Walgreens Boots Alliance. Really, we've been, you know, Walgreens was started back in 1901, so we've been around for a while. We got nearly 9,000 retail locations across America, Puerto Rico, and US. Also, we're part of Walgreens Boots Alliance, which is an integrated healthcare, pharmacy, and retail leader. Mm-hmm. And basically, pharmacists play a big role in what we do. We employ 330,000 people across the world, and we have a presence in about 8 countries, I believe. And then in addition to the around 8,500 or 9,000 stores in the US, we also have a total of 12,500 stores. That's also in the UK with Boots and across Latin America as well.
Jeez, so quite the scale. And yeah. So in your opinion, Steve, what qualities or skills make a great architect in today's rapidly evolving tech landscape?
Yeah, it's one of the passionate kind of topics I think about. I'm very passionate about kind of discussing what does architecture mean? What are the qualities that makes a really great architect? So in today, I do feel like there's this kind of like trinity of qualities like I look for when I'm hiring an architect. So there's technical skills. I think that goes without saying, but I want to add that this technical skill is something where you're comfortable getting into the weeds with, say, engineering partners and, you know, maybe really technical folks and technologists, data scientists, and so on. So that's one. And then there's also that kind of like that soft skills, interpersonal relationship skills. That's obviously very important to be able to partner with stakeholders and non-technical stakeholders specifically. So the product, mm-hmm. the business, the design, and so on. And then I think above all else, really, I look for really that drive and what I like to call like the drive or motivation or passion I think that's one of the ones that's really less quantifiable. It's hard to teach that. It's because part of it is because architecture is such a large, there's a lot under the architecture domain, right? So that's part of the reason I love architecture, is because you really get into it and you can, you know, one day you can be looking at data, the other day you can be looking at integration technologies, and then there's obviously strategy, and there's so much under the domain. How do you actually, you know, focus, and do you, you know, you have a lot of opportunities to learn these different domains, both technology and business verticals, but you have to have that self-drive and motivation to actually push yourself to learn really, and that would then translate into delivering value. So I think it's really hard to find somebody with all three of those qualities, but that's really something I strive for. And then I think as an architecture practice in today's world, we have to kind of balance between more strategic and also more pragmatic. So yeah. I think it's that combination.
You're absolutely right. And I feel that final part of the jigsaw puzzle, as you said, that third piece around self-drive and intrinsic motivation, not only is it hard to teach, it's really hard to assess at interview or when you're hiring as well, because everybody thinks they're motivated, but we all have different levels of expectations when it comes to motivation. So really hard to assess that. You're absolutely right. And how has your definition of what makes a good architect evolved over the years then?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting you asked that, because I actually, I thought a lot about this over the past 5 or 6 years, especially when basically I did kind of like a soul searching a little bit on what is the value that I can provide as an architect, what's the value that architecture provide to the organization. I think initially I feel like there is this traditional sense of what architecture brings to the table. And then what happens is some of the qualities and factors that makes a good architect start to evolve. So personally, for example, I believe that architecture as a practice did not evolve as fast as engineering did as a field, right? So over the past 15 years, it was really this boom in technology companies kind of leading the world in certain aspects. And you then have a lot of engineering best practices. You have open source. Now we're in the age of AI. The technology is just, it's not stopping for anyone. It's moving really fast. Yep. So engineering as a profession started to evolve with it as well. There's agile and, you know, how do we deliver value faster and better? I don't think architecture kept up. I think architecture, especially enterprise architecture, it's a little bit behind the curve on this kind of this evolution of the tech space. And because of that, the qualities of architecture needs to also evolve. And I think that's where we, you know, there's a certain skill set that needs to be hardened a little bit. A big part of it is that ability, quick ability to adapt, right? Be flexible as well. Mm-hmm. So this is no longer your traditional, you know, grandfather EA kind of thing where it's like ivory tower. You set something at the beginning, like waterfall, you set something in stone, and then you know you're never to be heard about again, and then everything else is taken on by engineering.
And then it's interesting we come on to that actually, because there's been some debate recently about the relevance and value of enterprise architectures as a practice. Some even argue that they're facing a bit of an identity crisis. And you know, that was mentioned in the article when you were on the CIO.com article. What's your take on this? And do you think enterprise architecture is dead or just undergoing a transformation?
So it's a very controversial topic. So, I mean, like, I'll just come out and say, I do believe that traditional, like, ivory tower, that waterfall enterprise architecture is definitely dead. I mean, at least on life support, right? So I mean, I do feel like there's certain people kind of holding on to that.
Yeah.
But the real question to ask here is, why are we even talking about whether EA is dead, or why are we even talking about an identity crisis? You know, you don't hear this about engineering, right? Nobody's debating the value of engineering. Nobody's debating the value of like data scientists or product, or, you know, like, why is it EA is the one that's being talked about, like, well, do we need EA and what is architecture doing and stuff like that. And I've been asked this question most of my career. Like, I'm very used to answering the question, like, what do you do, right? Like, yeah. What do your team do? So I think the real challenge here is, because architecture's value proposition is not as quantifiable as, say, like lines of code or something like that, mm-hmm. for engineering, it really largely depends on who you talk to, right? The value, depending on who you talk to, the value of each architecture is different from different roles to different yep. departments. And another one is the context and maturity of the organization, right? Like, people get confused on what architecture provides, because you can't approach each organization or each department in the same way as an architect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, I obviously have been part of several companies. The architecture, the value from architects and architecture each company needs is different. Some drastically different, some slightly different, depending on how large the organization is, how mature the organization is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like, we shouldn't even really be having this debate, but it's easy to kind of take pot shots at architecture because yeah. it's so easy to kind of get confused on exactly what their line is, like where they're yeah. supposed to be. So,
and that's where you've sort of coined the full stack architect, haven't you? And I've read a few sort of bits around your beliefs on that. Before we go on to that, could you explain what a full stack architect is for our listeners and why you believe it's the future of architecture roles?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something I've been kind of developing over the past, you know, few years now. I really look at myself as kind of like my journey to now as kind of like a reference point, starting when I think about architects. And then as I kind of rise through my career, when I hire architects, what are the qualities I look for? And one of the consistent challenges I've noticed is exactly like what we just talked about, which is the value of architects. Like, what do you do? And what do architects do? What's the value they bring to the organization? How is it aligned to, you know, business outcomes and so on? And then what I found some of the challenges a lot of people have is they ask very similar questions on, you know, like, hey, okay, great, 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 you're doing this, but oh, wait, I need somebody who understands the business, or I need somebody who is very technical, or I yep. need, you know, like engineers don't really understand what we're looking for if it's more from a non-technical stakeholders. I hear that too. I need a one-stop shop to kind of bridge the gaps between the various technical teams. Yep. These are all questions that's been asked of me many times. Like, how do you make sure tech debt is addressed? And then my favorite is, wait a minute, if you're not coding production code, how are you contributing? Right. So, and then the other part is like, we don't need PowerPoint architects. Like, these are kind of like I mentioned, like people take pot shots at architecture. And a lot of architects, when they hear this, the first reaction is they get defensive, right? They're like, what do you mean you don't know what we do? And then the traditional mindset of that enterprise architecture too, there's kind of like this rank or respect that they expect that goes along with the title of architects yeah. as well. So you kind of, when you mix those two, where people start to, especially over the past 15 years when engineering became more prominent, they start to take pot shots at architecture and ask these questions. And it's not with any ill will. They're just honestly asking these questions. You get the traditional architects getting more defensive about mm-hmm. this because you're used to being automatically yeah. respected. Then you really get this kind of like, I guess, this barrier of kind of like you start to move further apart. So the full stack architect is something I take after the full stack engineer, right? As engineering start to evolve, instead of we have like integration and backend mm-hmm. engineers and front end engineers, really they start to develop more on this full stack concept where they start to align on the tech stack too, for example, using like JavaScript for both front end mm-hmm. and backend.
Yep.
I use that as kind of like, I take inspiration from that in looking at what I'm calling full stack architect, because today there's various different types of architects too. There is, you know, platform architect that's yep. some very knowledgeable about a particular platform. There's solution architects, there's enterprise architects, there's a data architects, there's business architects. And we already talked about how some of these architects, the roles are being challenged and it's not clear what they do. Imagine you have multiple different roles that also, it's being challenged. Basically, yeah, adding to the confusion. So the full stack architect is the intent to bridge the gap between all the different types of architects. So not to mention, each of these architectures speaks to different, they're mostly focused on different stakeholders too. So if I break down to an organization into these type of stakeholders, so we have like business, we have product, we have design, we have engineering, we have basically run ops and delivery folks. The different type of architects talk to different people primarily. So for example, a business architect talk to the business and product primarily, right? Mm-hmm. Solution architect is really more on the product design engineering. And then enterprise architect kind of like is on the front end where it's business, product, maybe some design and engineering. Yep. The really technical architect talked to more like engineering delivery and support. The concept of a full stack architect is for somebody to really try to address and align with every one of these stakeholders together, right? So they are kind of like that go-to person and can speak intelligently to each of these stakeholders on a variety of topics. There's a difference between, I think, one of the questions I get is, well, how's a full stack architect different from, say, a generalist, right? And this, in a sense, there's some similarities to a generalist, but the difference here is the full stack architects have basically both the technical chops and the business chops to be able to deep dive into any particular topic. So this is not just a master of all trades, jack of all trades, master of none. They have this core skill set to be able to deep dive into any, like in a working session or in a working group, being able to deep dive into either technical design and or say, if it's on the business side, like understanding business value and investments and ROI.
So as you say, there's six areas across a business, hypothetically speaking, or most of the time anyway. How can we expect one person to understand the intricacies of data as well as software or platform, as well as, you know, things like Kubernetes from a DevOps or RunOps perspective, as well as business? How can we, because historically an engineer, let's say they are technical, you know, the personality traits that are akin to an engineer aren't usually, this isn't, you know, I'm not tarnishing everyone with the same brush here, but usually an engineer isn't that sort of person that can go out to the wider business really, really confident and ask questions about the business and then link it back to any technology which is best for the business. Mm-hmm. Historically, engineers come up through, you know, they specialize in a particular language, and this is where I've seen the software architect sometimes as a job role not be so successful, because they are a specialist in, let's say, .NET as a platform and a language. Therefore, all their designs and all their recommendations to the business are based around .NET, but actually the business, that's not the best thing for the business or that particular solution. So are we not expecting quite a lot of one or two people here to understand everything about every, to become a master of all trades?
Yeah, no, and that's a very legitimate question, because, and I think the full stack architect is not that, I mean, we're all human beings after all, right? We're not machines.
Up to now we are anyway. Who knows where the future might take?
Yeah, exactly. I know, who knows? Yeah. So we don't have unlimited, you know, unlike a computer, we don't have unlimited memory. We're not able to retrieve our memory at any given time. Like in our childhood, we have memories of our childhood and of our, you know, growing up and of our previous, how many years we've been on this earth. But we don't have the ability to pull them up instantly. And then there's a limit to how fast we can learn, I should say. So this is not kind of like a magical bullet that solves everything, right? Like I don't expect anybody to be a subject matter expert in all these different areas. The real idea behind a full stack architect is really that we mentioned before, like that drive and that flexibility and that mindset, right? So what I've seen usually people who are full stack, I consider them full stack architects, does this really well is they have a specialty, whether they start as an engineer or similar field, they have a particular specialty in one area that they're really, really good at. So that comes naturally to them because they've been doing this for many years in their career. So in that area, they're basically that go-to subject matter experts. But then once they start to really think about being an effective full stack architect, they start to learn about different areas, but learn about it enough to speak intelligently about it, but they will not be able to answer all the deep dive questions of all the different areas, right? Not just technical, but say like all the different business. For example, here at Walgreens, we have a variety of businesses. We have obviously the pharmacy side of the house. Mm-hmm. We have photos, retail. Yeah, mm-hmm. retail. We have healthcare side. We have so many different lines of business. Even within the business units themselves, they have a hard time getting it clear. So I don't expect any one person to understand all the different intricacies and complexities and, you know, maybe regulations. However, the idea behind this is this full stack architect can, if required, because they can speak intelligently about it. So maybe they understand a little bit about a lot.
Yeah.
But if required, they can really go, they have the context because they know something about a lot of these different areas. They have the ability and, more importantly, the drive, the growth mindset to be able to deep dive into any particular domain or expertise to learn about it rapidly. Mm-hmm. And the difference between a full stack architect learning about this and, say, somebody who is very versed in, say, Java, right? Say a developer, mm-hmm. where you just mentioned learning a particular language, a brand new language. For example, it's easy to learn C# if you know Java, right? Because there's a lot of similarities to it, but it's maybe harder to learn maybe a different type of other language than, if, you know, so the further apart the difference of in language I'm using in this example, the harder it is to learn. The full stack architect have context in almost everything, and because of that, their ability to pick it up should be easier than somebody starting from scratch. So for example, like maybe somebody who is a Salesforce architect or SAP architect learning something that's completely you know,
digital departed. Front end, for example. Okay, that makes sense. And you mentioned when we were talking about the EA as a practice, one of the things is them actually having to justify the value they bring. And so how do you ensure that your architecture efforts or your team's architecture efforts drive tangible value for an organization?
Yeah. So, and I think this is really what drove me to, you know, developing the full stack architect, because everything that architecture do must have a direct line to outcomes, right? Especially business outcomes, but also technology outcomes. And I think if you look at, if I were to start from really more around your traditional mindset of what's the value of enterprise architecture, it really comes down to like that mission and revenue. That's one thing, like cost efficiency, maybe like risk management for sure, and then that customer experience and also innovation, you know, like some of these like pillars of what architecture can bring to the table. And then I think it's a matter of how anything that we do, we must align to some of these pillars. So for example, if I were to say it's like value, mission, and revenue, right? So we're really looking at like time to market. How do we, you know, deliver fast the time to market? How do we kind of, when we talk about risk, how do we reduce risk, especially in a heavily regulated industry? And then from that point on, like everything that an architect does or architecture team or department does have to have a direct line to that goal of, say, time to market. So what do we do that increases time to market? Well, patterns, right? This way we can reduce the amount of time we go through governance. We can have a paved direction on how we actually support the whatever product to deliver faster into production. So along those lines, but a big part of this is also constantly understanding the business too and what they're looking for. Because when we talk about time to market, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the flagship app for an organization? Yep. Are we talking about, you know, maybe like cloud migration or so on? So.
And therein lies the problem with architecture, I believe, because it's really important that you align architecture, that you align IT and technology to the business. Absolutely. It should be an enabler rather than the driver. However, there's so many different parts of the business, and each stakeholder has got their own mission, values, whether it's part of the bigger values and mission, they've got their own motives. And this is, you know, from the reason why I set the podcast up was because I was seeing transformation programs and over transformation programs just failing and failing or not achieving the original outcomes. And that was one of the reason why it's the key stakeholders or board members having buy-in right at the beginning and then not having the patience to deliver that or to be around to get that delivered. So back to that, yes, I completely agree. But how does an architect manage being able to say, right, okay, so they're doing a cloud transformation. Their mission is to get everything into the cloud as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible. So therefore the cost is, you know, cost reduction, for example, might be, and high availability. But this person over here is purely all around, you know, getting to the customer quicker, da-da-da-da. There's links there, but ultimately they've got completely different objectives. As an architect, how difficult is that? And as a technical architect, you know, where you've probably not had that exposure to the business and understanding the commercials and so on, how does that work within the world of full stack architecture?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is exactly the problem that full stack architects are there to address. Because to your point exactly, if it's a technical architect who's basically in the weeds all day long, they don't have the context of the business, right? Or what the business problem is. And then you maybe have a business architect who's very versed in the business, but then they don't have maybe like the knowledge of some of the platforms or cloud modernization or something like that. So having that full stack architect is to have the context of both sides, of all the different areas. But to your point, it's still really hard, right? Like this is not easy, because the business, on the business side, that their goals change all the time, you know, because they're also trying to go agile, and then they're trying to like adapt and quicker delivery to market. So it's not an easy problem to solve, but the way I like to think about it is having full stack architects here is to have that one person or one group of people to go to, who then can help handhold and provide the answers to whoever stakeholder it is, right? The different stakeholders I kind of mentioned. Like I have a thing I tell my team, which is like, we are not in the business of pointing fingers, right? Like this is not, I'm not here. We should not be in a situation where we're like, okay, well, you know what? That's not my problem, or that's not my job. Oh, wait a minute. You need this technical person to talk to, or maybe it's not even a technical or business kind of thing. Maybe it's more within the business. Say, oh, well, no, that's on the retail side. You need somebody's pharmacy to go talk to this person. And then you leave people with a bad taste in their mouth, because it's like, wait a minute. So you're the architect for this, but then I have to find the architect for that. And then, you know, like pharmacy architect. Okay, if I go to pharmacy architect, oh no, this is actually more specialized, you know, specialization pharmacy or something like that. I have to go to somebody else. Like that's what I'm trying to avoid, because then not only the value of architecture is, you know, being debated, I now have to go make the hops to different kind of architects, and I don't even know who they are, right? So that's really mindset. Now to your point about like how to actually link the outcomes, right? First, understanding the context from the business and IT side, and understanding some of the, you know, systems and some of the big moving rocks, you then have the context to kind of bridge them together. And like I said, like full stack architects is, you know, we're not machines. We don't know everything about everything, but we do know enough to know who to go to. And a big part of this is that follow through, right? This is not your like, okay, well, good. This is great. And then I know the context, but you have to go to this person. It's more about following through, and at sometimes it may be handholding the business, for example, if they're going after something, or maybe with technical folks, it's like, you know what, you want to move to this, you know, you mentioned like some of the modern technologies, like maybe we're using like building AI models or something, but how does this relate to business value? Like we need to have our eyes on the ball, and then having that partnership with engineering continually help, you know, provide guidance and refinement to what they're doing to align to the business outcomes and what the business needs. That's a big value add,
and that gets rid of the ivory tower architect that everybody always talks about. Nobody admits that they are, so so I briefly touched on, I think the official statistic is either 82 or 84% of transformations I'm putting fail in inverted commas because nobody knows what a failure is. It's not achieving the original objectives. They often face challenges. It's a massively high failure rate. So a couple of questions. Firstly, why do you think that is? And how can organizations harness talent and resources to increase the success rate of those efforts? Because more bodies, chucking more bodies at it certainly isn't the answer, is it?
No, and sometimes it's to the detriment of the transformation. So I think this is a high percentage, right? Like transformation fail. I think it comes down to, if I were to think about why that is, it's really, I mean, I hate to say it, it's people, right? In general, coming from like being in engineering by training and just in my personal life, I tend a lot of times, you know, pros and cons to this, but I tend to think in zeros and ones a lot of the times. And if you look at it from that perspective, and then like a machine run the same code every time, you know, it works the same way every time under the same conditions. Great, you get the same outcomes. But human beings are not, right? Like you can talk to the same person, one ask the same questions one time in the same kind of situation. The next day, the answer might be different because the person got on the wrong side of the bed. So human beings are inherently messy, right? Like I think, and because of that, I think there is a lot of challenges when you are looking at, especially a large organization, medium to large organizations, on doing a large scale transformation, whether it's digital modernization, whether it's cloud, you know, cloud migration, or any of these like big programs or transition to AI in this case. Some of the challenges I've personally observed is, for example, the culture, right? It starts with the culture. What is the culture you're trying to set? Are you a technology company, quote unquote technology company, right? I think a lot of these traditional retail or traditional companies are like, hey, they look at Google and Amazon over the past 10 years, like we want to be that, right?
Yeah.
But they don't even know how to get there, right? Like what does it entail to get there?
Yeah.
There's also an element of kind of like psychological safety, right? I think a lot of engineers and architects and just even product folks, they are looking at this world that's moving so fast. And they look at maybe, especially over the past few years, there's a lot of new leadership changes. But there's a lot of disruption. And for people, human beings, to really deliver value effectively, they need to be motivated. And this comes back to the motivation thing. I'm trying to find people who are self-motivators, but a lot of people are not like that. And when they feel they're not motivated or they see things changes too much and too fast, they feel like they always have to look on you know, behind the backs and look over their shoulders, right? So there's a psychological safety aspect of it. There's also that kind of, that leads to kind of like that resistance to change. And then also, you know, they have a lot of times there's too many choices for a certain path, and then it's hard for them to choose and move forward efficiently if they feel like maybe they're going to be on the hook. So these are kind of all the problems, and the fact that the 80 something percent kind of tells you like it's not easy to solve this problem of kind of herding the masses towards this unified goal to deliver efficiently, right? And then what happens is this is further convoluted by, especially when you have a leadership change at the top level, they come in, the culture kind of gets disrupted, they have their own way of doing things, whatever. So a lot of these programs last at least 2 to 3 years, at least, right? So, I mean, is that leader going to be here in 2 to 3 years? So these are all the challenges. I think an organization, for them to actually succeed in any of these large scale transformation, is to make sure that the board, right, who's helping advise and drive the company, as well as this really top C-level executive, needs to understand whatever they're moving forward with, they need to have not only a commitment to do so, but a clear direction that's socialized throughout the organization. Yeah. I don't think they can be swayed. You know, it depends on what kind of companies you are. But if you're like a public company, there's also stock prices to be considered. Yeah. There needs to be this sense of stability within the organization that, hey, we're not just going to pivot because, you know, something happened, or we have this one change of leadership, or our stock prices are going up or down or something like that. Like there needs to be some kind of like stability in moving forward. And I think through that, you kind of can gain a little bit of stability and trust and establish that culture that people are, you know, feeling like they don't have to look over the shoulder. They're feeling like, okay, there's somebody up there that's leading the organization that I trust and have confidence in.
They've got psychological safety that you mentioned earlier, effectively. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And a new leader could completely change that. Out of curiosity, Steve, in terms of your leadership, what type of or what size of teams have you led?
Yeah. So I led a fairly large team at CBS. You know, I think during that time, we were aggressively hiring at that time. So I grew the team from 3 people to 20 plus people. And then I think for an architecture organization, that's fairly large. However, I feel like it's less about the size of the team. It's more about, and especially I feel like architects are a specialized type of role within the IT. So I think it's more around how do you actually gain their trust, right? Yeah. Like to run an effective team. Trust comes from, you know, trust has to be earned, which means how do you earn it? And a big part of that, especially for me, is that authenticity, right? You have to be authentic. And that's kind of like contrary to being that ivory tower, right? You have to be authentic and partner with your team and understand them, have that credibility with them too, and that clear line of communication. So,
yeah. Okay. And how do you get the best out of your team then, other than a clear line of communication?
Yeah. So coming back to really that. So because like I mentioned, I'm an engineer, and if I look at who I trust, right, I need to have a clear understanding of, because being an engineer, it's very much zeros and ones. Like, how do you matter to me, right? Yes. So I'll give you this story. So this is years ago when I was deploying to production in a particular deployment. This is before CI/CD, before the cloud, before rapid deployment, stuff like that. Back then, we used to deploy like on Friday nights after business hours. So, and we'd only deploy like 4 times a year. And then there's not as many, like there's no SREs at that time. It's more like I was not only developing, but I had to deploy my code into production myself and stuff like that. And I remember it was like at like midnight, right? Because this is like everybody's trying to get out of there and we're trying to deploy to production. We have to test it in production. And I remember I was sitting there, I was doing everything, and I kind of see everybody crowd around my cube, right, at that time. Yeah. And then you got architects there and you got managers there, and they all want to get out of there because it's like 2 o'clock in the morning at this time. And like, how's it going, Steve? How's it going, Steve? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? And then I remember there was a point where I was thinking, like, what are these people doing? Like, I'm the one who's doing all the work. Like, what are they doing? What are these different roles doing? You know, what's the architect doing? What's the manager doing? Now, obviously, I was very naive back then, but that kind of stuck with me a little bit, which is like, at that time, me as an engineer, or me later on as I progressed to my career as an architect, like, they have to prove the value to me, right? Like, I have to understand their value. And since then, I really kind of grew into, like, my leadership style is based off of, I do not want to be the kind of architect or lead the kind of architect that people do not respect, or they don't have the credibility from people, because I remember how that felt like. So from that perspective, coming back to your question around like, how do I kind of get the best out of people, it's first, you know, really building that trust, right? Really having that kind of trust with your team, so your team can come to you for anything. And then at the same time, to build that trust, being authentic, but also having that credibility. Like, you have to, your team have to be able to look up to you and see that, okay, this is somebody who can do it and who can drive value. Yeah. Therefore, agreed. I, you know, agree with them. So.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we're coming towards the end, Steve. So moving on to our quick fire questions. What do you expect in 2024 will be the game changer from a technology perspective?
So I think the easy answer here is just AI and Gen AI and stuff like that. Yeah. However, I will say that it's less about the technology itself. It's more around how can organization adapt to it to deliver really real quantifiable business outcomes, right? Yes. Like that has to be, we can talk about technology all we want. And personally, I find it really awesome that we live in an age where we have new technologies like that, but being able to quickly adopt and deliver real value to the consumers.
Okay. What advice would you give a newly appointed chief architect?
Put up or shut up. Like, there is a real difference here between me sitting here on this podcast talking about this stuff and also being tactical about it in an organization, delivering real value, right? And a big part of that is not just to talk about it, but to do it. And that's kind of like the mindset of that full stack architect, which is you don't only talk about, you know, architecture and, you know, guidance and roadmaps and strategies and so on, but can you follow through with it? Can you be front and center, follow through with whatever you're doing that you're helping the organization to? And this is, I'm really talking about really getting into the weeds, like really partner with business, really partner with technology leaders and so on. But being really being follow through to the end, not just at the beginning, not just at say, okay, here's a high level architecture. You guys take it from here, right? Really deep partnership.
So. Get in it. And is that the advice you'd wish you'd received early on in your career? Get as close to the value as possible and put up or shut up, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's this element of, hey, well, I'm an architect, like la-di-da, like back then, right? It's like, well, you get this kind of like, you know, I feel like as an architect, that respect that I think a lot of architecture titles have, they needs to constantly be earned. Like we are in a situation, at least personally, in my opinion, that no matter what role you're doing in this fast-changing, agile, technology-driven world, we have to make sure that we constantly prove value. Like, you know, that trust and value needs to be constantly proven and earned. So,
yeah, like anything, it's return on investment, whether you're investing in a new piece of technology or an architect, whatever it is, you know, there has to be that value there, 100%. What's the hardest interview question you've ever had, Steve? Or given, by the way,
No, I think it's, I don't know. I think it's more around, especially being an architect, I think the questions can come out of left field, right? One day it could be a very deep technical question. The other one, it could be around, hey, like, how come we did not meet this ROI metric or, you know, net promoter scores? So being able to feel that question, like I mentioned, like, I'd like to get into the weeds. But sometimes when you're in the weeds, you have to take a few step backs to actually see the bigger picture again. And when I'm in the weeds and somebody give me a question that's really high, like more strategic, then I think it takes some time to adjust. And vice versa too, when we're looking at more maybe driving investment or business value, and then somebody give a more technical question, being able to adapt really quickly, that's challenging. Yeah.
Okay. And final question, what's the biggest change you expect to see in the market over the next 5 years, specifically from a talent perspective?
So, I hope it's more, you know, full stack architects in the industry. But I think in general, not just whether it's full stack architects, whether it's a product folks, whether it's engineers, it's more being able to adapt to the fast changing technology. It's like we thought last 15 years, things have blown up, right? It's like really the human race have evolved, not just from a technology space, but how the technology enabled everything. I think AI is going to do the same, if not more, in the next 10 to 15 years. And because of that, it's more around, can we really adapt as a human being's kind of like mindset and growth mindset? Yep. One of the things that I like to say that full stack architects is be like water, right? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Bruce Lee he compared his martial arts like water, which means it's not any strict style of martial arts. It's around being flexible enough to adapt and overcome. Yep. And I think that's really what I think about both full stack architects and engineering and even product folks, right? So I have daughters, and right now I'm teaching them to code, but now I'm like, well, the Copilot and some of these gen AI can really do a great job in coding. Like some of these tools are amazing. So is it really worthwhile to go deep into coding, or is it more worthwhile to think about as a product, what are you trying to develop? Yeah. And you still need to learn to code, but it's more like, how do you adapt and use the tools available to you? That's how you accelerate. You can't be, you know, still very traditional in your mindset to say, you know what? You know, I learned to code this way, therefore my team is going to code this way. And then, or we have to learn product, for example, the business used to be run this way. Now that's how good business, you know, I started this company. It's like, if you have these awesome technology tools, like use it and leverage it and adapt your business strategy, adapt your technology strategy to get the most out of it, to move faster. Yeah. I think the next 5 years.
I
think the next 5 years is going to be driven and led by whoever, whatever company that can actually accelerate the fastest and use the tools available. So whoever can kind of, it's kind of like how cloud too is, right? Like in the past, when somebody had a great idea, they have to stand up their own servers and machines and set up, you know, networking. Today, you have like $10, you can go to AWS, Azure, and then stand something up. So ideas can be realized faster. I think it's the same in the AI age. So
fair enough. Well, what a great way to end. Sadly, Steve, we've run out of time. So thank you so much for joining us and for, I suppose, giving us your thoughts on what will be an interesting job role of the future if it's not already happening now. So thanks for going into the detail around the full stack architect. And thanks for another excellent podcast episode and for giving us your time today, Steve.
No, thank you for the opportunity. This has been an awesome conversation.
And that's a wrap. Sadly, we're at the end of another Transformational Blueprints episode. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and there were plenty of golden nuggets for you to take away. If you're a fan of the show, please do remember to share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these too. Please also follow Synactia Group on LinkedIn to keep up to date with new episodes. Links in the show notes. Join us next time for another episode packed with tips and advice from senior leaders in the technology world.